said I get so used to people trying to push me around. I get so used to so much man around this town. I get so used to so much bad advice. When it comes around this time, I ain't gonna think twice. I said, Doctor, Doctor, you ain't got no remedy, no. I got my woman at home, she's everything I need. I said, now, Doctor, Doctor, you ain't got no remedy, no. Got my woman at home, she's everything I need. What gives you the right to say someone needs help? You so worry about yourself, mister, and nobody else. Some folks just got all the wrong with the action. Only love, and your guys got the best guessing. I said, Doctor, Doctor, you ain't got no remedy, no. I got my woman at home, she's everything I need. I said, my baby got my love prescription to take my pain away. I don't need drugs, I need love, I need kisses from my missus. There is something in the air and she's cooking up nothing but love. And I said, Doctor, Doctor, you ain't got no remedy. I got my woman at home, she's everything I need. I said, Doctor.
Good evening and welcome to Talkin' Music. I'm Allie Lightfoot. That was Doctor Doctor for multi-instrumentalist and songwriter Zach Deputy, who's in Paonia tonight to perform a show at the Paradise Theater. I had a chance to speak with Zach earlier today about his hard-to-classify sound, his early experiences as a musician, and how he started looping. We'll begin by hearing about the KVNF field session he took part in yesterday, where he performed for some goats at the Avalanche Dairy in Paonia. For those of you who don't know, KVNF is filming live music performances out in the field, literally in some cases.
Yep.
And we tried to pick some unique locations or situations to put musicians in, and I think we put you in a pen full of goats.
It was lots of goats. You know, I've never seen goats that big. They're like horse goats.
They're healthy.
They were healthy.
Yeah,
really
out healthy. At Avalanche Dairy.
Yeah.
They're happy goats,
they
too.
They were happy goats. Yeah, they like to chew.
And they like everything. To dance.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I really didn't expect them to enjoy the show as much as they did.
They had a good time. They did. They did. Then they were confused at first, but that one goat was digging on it.
Mm-hmm.
The head-banging goat. Yep.
Yeah, I think that goat liked Lincoln Continental the best.
Mm-hmm.
That was where he really...
That was a clubbing goat. It only liked the club jams, like, you know. The stuff that goat got into. Country music, it was not into.
No, but he, you know, he was polite. He stayed in the front row the whole time,
yeah.
But he just didn't start really grooving until...
Yeah, until the club mix. Other than that, he was just eating the metal fence, or trying to.
People here who are going to buy tickets, I've had to, they'll say, well, what is he, you know, what kind of music does he do?
Yeah.
And I used to try to explain it, and it would be this, like, long.
It hurts the brain, right? I've been doing whatever it is that I do for a very long time, and I still have no clue. When people go... Oh, there we go with my phone. When people go, what do you do? What kind of music? I just kind of have a brain freeze every time. And I'm just like, I really don't know.
Yeah. I wanted to explain it, though, too. Like, I couldn't just be like, oh, don't worry about it. Just
trust me.
Just go to the show. You can dance to it. I promise. It's not only how you describe yourself, but then how everyone else is trying to describe it, too. But there's like
The Island Infused. Drum and bass, gospel, ninja soul.
Yeah.
I get that. I don't get the drum and bass. I don't know, you know, my former manager came up with that tagline and I'm like, drum and bass. I do not do drum and bass at all. But other than that, it all makes sense.
Yeah.
Was when like, I think of drum and bass, I think, I am the fire starter, the only fire starter. You know, I don't think it's anything to do with
right.
That.
Yeah, that was the one part that I was a little confused about. And then you might throw in a ballad, you'll beatbox, there's some hip hop, there's country songs, there's blues, there's flamenco. I read somewhere you do a Frank Zappa cover.
Oh, I have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's reggae, calypso. I think yesterday someone described you as James Brown if he was from the islands.
That's probably the best description.
Yeah, and that's very simple.
An albino James Brown from the islands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I might go with that from now on. I realize that I actually love that about your music, how it sort of refuses to be put into a neat little package.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if you've struggled with that in your career to some extent, people trying to define you.
It's a blessing and a curse. The bad about it is not going to be a quick start. You know, if you are in a demographic or if you're in a definable style of music, right from the start, you can just be thrown into that. Oh, you play bluegrass. Let's put you on the bluegrass circuit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you play soul music. Let's put you in all these soul clubs. You know, you're a blues band. Oh, let's put you on the blues festivals. And it all makes sense. Oh, you play, you know, jam band music, put you in the jam band scene. With me, it was like, what do you do? You know, so it's a very slow start. It's really hard to explain to people what I do. But the cool thing is, now that something has happened around it, now that there's a genuine fan base around it, it has created its own scene. And so it's a scene separate from all the other scenes. And so as it grows, you know, it's not going to be on the whims of, oh, is that scene happening? You know, is dubstep still current? You know, James Brown was current from when he was started to when he ended, because James Brown did James Brown music. Before James Brown came, nobody knew what the funk was. They haven't defined it yet. They haven't said, oh, that's the funk, because James Brown didn't exist. But after he came, they were like, oh, that's funky. Ooh. Oh, yeah, that's funky. And they would say that's funky. But really what they're saying was, that sounds like James Brown, you know. And I think anything that's great should be undescribable.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can't really pin it onto anything because it's completely original. And, you know, originality in the music scene is not that normal. I think it's a combination of having so many different cultural references growing up and taking all those and throwing it in a soup and then perfecting the soup in different ways. And I used to play a bunch of shows back home, and a lot of them were just exploration. You know, I was just going to see or try different ideas, and I wasn't afraid to, like, go in a direction for, like, a whole month and explore all these things and come up with something new. Instead of going, ooh, I want to learn this song and I want to create this song and then reproduce it over and over again, I was looking for things, you know. I was seeking for the new world, you know, out there, new piece of land that nobody has ever found that has rivers flowing and awesome creeks. I wasn't, like, saying, oh, this is awesome. I wanted to find something new, and so that's what I set out to do. I wasn't content with music until I found my own voice. And there was actually a time where I quit listening to any music for like about 3 years. I didn't listen to music, period, unless I played it. I wanted to shut everything off just to get to what was deep in my own mind. I wanted to shut off all references so I could hear it clearly, you know, cut off the noise pollution. So finally I'd be like, oh, that's what I'm hearing. Mm-hmm. And I started to define the way I felt music instead of the way I interpreted somebody else feeling music. And that, I think that was the big change.
One thing I think it does have consistently is there's a lot of positivity. It's feel-good stuff for the most part.
Yeah.
Why? And, you know, there's all kinds of music that isn't like that that's also great. But why do you think you gravitated towards that?
And simplicity. I like to write songs about things that I want to remember, like when I have an epiphany or when I finally figure something out that is big and profound and bigger than me. Us as humans, we have the ability to forget something that we've learned that we absolutely knew without a doubt was true before. And so I don't take pictures. I'm not a photographer. I'm a musician. But I take pictures with my songs. And they help remind me of things I've learned in the past and help sculpt who I'm going to be in the future. And I choose to remember the things that are going to edify my life and bring joy and something real back to me, you know, instead of remembering the things that destroyed me or brought me down. Why do I need to remember that? Or why do I need to think about that? That's not important, you know. So I just choose to think about the stuff that builds me back up and hopefully builds other people back up, because, you know, that's the whole point. That's what gives me purpose in what I do.
So why don't we just find some place to go? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I said, why don't we just find some place to go? Yeah, yeah, yeah. I said, sunshine is on my mind. A good friend. Oh, wish you could. I wish you could feel the same I do. Because I got it bad. You know I got it bad, baby, baby. I got it bad for loving you, yeah, yeah. I said, help, baby, help.
said, help, better help me. Help me cross the door. Won't you sing it, babe? Won't you sing it now? Won't you sing it, babe? Won't you sing it now, now? Won't you sing it, babe?
You've talked a little bit about the idea of abandoning any, you know, plans to get on a big label, and you have sort of a new model for touring, for PR, how you want to run your whole operation. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, I just, I want to do it more organically, and I want to do it more based on the people. I don't want the people to lift it up. I don't want some huge conglomerate to get an album, have their say in the album, because that's what's going to happen if you're with a major label. They're going to have their say, and they're going to want you to do things their way. They're going to want to change your lyrics or change this about you, you know. And so I'm never going to do that. And I'd rather have the people be the voice that lifts it up, that actually makes it happen. And that way it's real anyways. You know, I'd rather be playing in front of 100 real people than a million fake ones. You know what I mean? And I'd be very terrified to be in a place where I would become a fake person because I want something. And, you know, that's the whole thing about the industry. I feel like if you really want to go after it that way, you have to give up some of you and some of yourself. And then that's just not an option, period. So.
And I know you've probably told this story a million times, but how did you start looping?
It was an accident. I had a bass player, and I won't go into why he couldn't make it to the show, but he was inebriated. And I called him. I went over to his house, actually, and went to get him, and he was in no shape to go anywhere. And I continued to try to talk him into it for about 40 minutes, and then I'm like, this is not going to work. So I called my drummer at the time. And I said, hey, the show is off. You know, Eric can't make it. And I went and called the venue manager. And it was the venue phone. And she picked up. And right when she picked up, I hung up. And I'm like, I don't want to cancel the gig, you know. And I'd never looped before, but I had this thing. It's called a DL4. It's a line 6 pedal. You can use it for delays or looping, but it's mostly for delays. But I've seen somebody before use it for looping, so I'm like, I could go use that and loop, and I'll make something happen. And anyways, long story short, I went. I thought it was horrible. It was not a good show, but everybody loved it. And in my mind, I said, imagine if this was good. So it all started with my imagination. I asked that question. Imagine if this was good. How much more would they like it?
Mm-hmm.
And it was then where I started doing it on the side. I still kept my band thing. I didn't think the looping thing was anything other than a vehicle to play more shows because the band was slack and they didn't want to play, you know, 6 days a week like I did. I wanted to play every day if I could. So I started playing on like Sunday, Mondays, and Tuesdays with the loop thing and doing the band thing the rest of the week and the weekend warrior gigs. And fast forward about, you know, 3 years, and all of a sudden my Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday was crushing my rest of the week with the band. And so just a simple crunch of numbers saying a lot more people like this show than that show. And the people kind of told me what to do, you know.
It's mm-hmm.
like, do this. This is what we love.
Well, I like it because you're kind of, there's something suspenseful about it. Like you're like, I'm always worried. I don't know why, because I've seen you play enough that I know you're on top of it.
Yeah.
But
well, yeah.
I'm always worried that like the timing's going to get off and throw the whole thing into some kind of, you know, chaos or something.
If you're off time on a looper, then it plays it back over and over and over again. It's way worse than being off time in a band. You know, you can recover and just get back on. But if you mess up a looper, it sounds horrible. And it's, you know, it's not as easy as people would think it is. I kind of make it look easy because I feel like I was meant to do looping, because before I even knew what a looper was, I had this karaoke machine, mm-hmm. and it had a play side and a record side, you know, tape decks way back in the day. And I would take and I would record on the record side, and like for 3 minutes I would go And then I, after I would record for 3 minutes a beat, I'd come back and I'd grab my bass and I'm, you know, and then I come back with a guitar and I was doing looping. I didn't call it looping. I was just like, I'm recording albums. I had like these like 50 different albums that I made when I was like 16 or so. They're all probably horrible, but made them with a Casio keyboard and a guitar and a bass and a karaoke machine.
Nice.
Yeah.
I want to hear one of those.
I don't.
So what do you, who are some of the musicians that you started off loving and who are the people that have inspired you, would you say?
Some of my biggest inspirations would be Tito Puente, Harry Belafonte, James Brown, Michael Jackson, Stevie Wonder, Bucky Pizzarelli.
I don't know that one.
Old jazzer. Django Reinhardt. For guitar and stuff, I just, you know, really dived into loving the way those guys played. Ray Charles, one of my biggest. He's still the only musician who makes me cry. You know, just such a powerful voice. But those are most of my tops, you know. I listen to a lot of old stuff. I think we were talking yesterday and I told you I believe that we peaked out in the 40s, you know, musically and culturally with music. I think the 40s was like the coolest. So I like a bunch of old stuff.
Yeah.
It's just really, that's me.
Yeah.
You know, but it's funny because my music is current, you know. But it has that old stuff in it, but it has the current. Because, I mean, growing up in the 90s, you know, you grow up in the hip-hop world, and then you grow up listening to all those beats. And so you still want those beats. It's like you fiend for that. But I fiend also for the soul of music back then. I just felt like it had so much more behind what they were saying.
You talked a little bit yesterday about how you felt like music was sort of what got you out of where you grew up, like you were looking to get out of there.
Yeah, well, you
and
know.
When did you realize like this might be my ticket out of the hood?
That all happened by fate because I actually came out to Colorado when I was my really early 20s, and like maybe 20, and we wanted to make a band. And me and my buddy Kyle came out and we were like, let's go to California and make a band, you know, just some crazy idea. We're like, okay, we got to Colorado and we never left for about 6-7 months. But we started a band and actually Jeremy Sulkin from Big Gigantic played drums in it too. And we started a band and I was just very uninspired by it. And at that moment, I wasn't enjoying what I was doing. And I decided that I didn't want to do it anymore. And I actually quit music for about a year and a half and went back and did construction with my dad. And I worked construction with my dad. But my dad was like, boy, you don't need to be doing this for the rest of your life. Look at me and look at my hands. Look what I've done. So I tried to find a different job other than that, you know, under my dad's advice. And I got a job selling timeshares, probably the worst job ever. And I only had it for my 2-week training period and 1 week on the floor. And I remember I was on the floor and I had this guy that I was trying to sell to, and a nice old man, and he kept telling me everything I was telling him was BS, for lack of better words. And he told me that Article A was a lie, Article B was a lie, Article C was a lie. And, you know, I was like, okay, I'll go ask my boss about it. And after my pitch to him, I went and talked to my boss and I asked him, I said, he said, this is a lie, this is a lie, and this is a lie. And he's like, well, yes, it is, but we can't tell him that if we're going to sell it to him. And I was like, well, I guess I quit. And right then I quit and walked right out the door. And I walked right next door to a bar. My friend Lori was working at the bar. And right when I get to the bar, she's like, starts complaining. She's like, there was supposed to be this guy playing tonight, and he just called and canceled. I can't believe this. And I was like, I got a guitar in the car. You know, I can make this happen. Anyways, I came in, and I played, and she gave me $200. She's like, come back next week. You got a gig. And at the time, I was making, like, before I tried to do the timeshare thing, which I made no money at because I never made a sale. And
because you had to lie.
Because you had to lie. Once I realized that my whole existence there was a sham and I was just being paid to be a liar, I'm like, I got to get out of this. This is a hole of the devil right here. But anyways, I got that gig. And when I was working with my dad, I was making $300 a week. So I was like, if I get two gigs like this, I'm already up. And that's what started it again. And it just kind of, from there, it was pretty much that's all I did.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun. Yeah. Funny how that happened.
It felt right.
Yeah, it felt right. It was like, this is where I'm supposed to be. You know, I'm not trying to make this happen. I actually tried to run from music, and music just fell right back in my lap.
Zach, it's so great to have you here. Thanks for
Allie.
For coming to our little tiny town where we're going to just dance all night long, basically, is what I think is going to happen.
My
if
pleasure.
If they let us.
They better.
Yeah.
Changing town ordinance.
Yeah.
For the boogie. We will make exception for the boogie.
Sounds like a plan.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you.
You've been listening to an interview with musician Zach Deputy, who's performing at the Paradise Cedar in Paonia tonight starting at 8. Tickets may still be available at the door for $25. Thank you for tuning in to Talkin' Music on KVNF. I'm Allie Lightfoot. Stay tuned. Coming up next, All Songs Considered.
They just hear the stereo jam. I gotta play little real music, cause the music's what I am. So I go from town to town and watch the people get down up. Make a little bit noise and then I do it all again. Just why I had to get it down. never hear the real music. They just hear the stereo jam. Gotta play a little real music, cause the music's what I am. So I go from town to town to watch the people get down. Make a little bit of noise.